dus. Gaan we beginnen, Thomas? Sorry?
Ja, wat hier ons doen, hè?
Und funktioniert? Okay. Hallo. Hallo. Chaos Communication Camp and hello Vienna. Here is Talking Anthropology and that's our first show here we're doing, which is here on the FM radio, on the festival, also on the streaming service, and this time also in Vienna on Radio Orange, the local radio station. And so we have a few more people who we should explain what we're doing here. And therefore, I'd like to introduce, first of all, my dear colleague, GMC.
Hello, good evening.
Yeah, GMC, what the hell are we doing here for people from Vienna who have no idea what they're listening to right now?
I often wonder myself. Basically, in one sentence, we are on an abandoned Russian airbase, which is now a museum. So there's lots of props around in the form of jet fighters, but that's not the important part. We are here with basically, I think, 2,500-3,000 hackers. We've pitched up our tents, so we're camping, and well, it's not your regular camping. I mean, when nerds go camping, they bring a lot of stuff. Anything that's engineering, technology, electronics, whatever, we bring it and, well, we play with it. Like, for example, this radio studio.
Yeah, there was no radio studio a few days ago.
Yep.
We just built it from scratch. And the event here is organized by the Chaos Computer Club, one of the world's most oldest and most admired hacker organizations based in Germany. And part of the CCC is another guest we have here, Lindworm.
Hello. Oh, hello. Hi, now I'm there.
Yeah, switching microphones, right? Without telling me. That's sneaky.
So, what do you want to know?
Maybe tell us something about you and how you came to the CCC when you first heard from it.
Okay, I came to the CCC about 5 years ago when I first heard about the Hackers Congress in Berlin. Every year between Xmas and New Year's. And I fell in love with all the hackers out there. I'm a nerd myself, and it was beautiful seeing all this laser light, all this great stuff they're doing, and they could explain it to you in detail. That was great.
So it was really the events that catched you first, because you are also important for this event here and for the Congress. You became a part of it, one could say.
I became a part of it. Yeah, I want to contribute to something, some little things to it. So I could stand on a stage and introduce some speakers and handle all the room and such stuff. So I did that. And over time, I became a little bit of figure, but the great figure is Nick Farr.
Oh, yeah. Nick Farr, for those people who don't know it, how can one explain? He's American. He came to the camp 2007. Mm. It's only every 4 years here. And he later started a whole movement. It was not only him, but Hackerspaces evolved from the last camp, and he was part of it. And back in the days, we had only a handful, maybe 20, 30 Hackerspaces, and now we have over 500.
Yeah, he's a great organizer, and he's also a great entertainer on the stage, and that what brings the people forward to him. That's really great.
Yeah, and GMC mentioned that we are on a former airbase here, and a few Americans also arrived with an airplane on the field. I didn't see the plane landing. I would have loved to do that.
Not once. I believe there are three landings, actually, to bring them all in.
Oh, well, okay. So I missed even more. Yes, maybe we play some music now before we come back. And this will be... Yes, I have something.
Tom, you should not touch the cables while you're playing music anymore. That's
I wasn't touching this cable, but anyway, that's it with music from my side. We are talk radio anyway, and we should stick to talking. And this is still the first day that we are on, so there's still room for problems, as I see it. But now it's better. Okay, good. Totally chaotic. The chaos in the name is really also part of the program.
It's also part you. You go ahead and close the doors to the tent, even though there's speakers there. So
yeah.
You change the setup while we're live. That's
yes. But it's the first show. We're all learning. Therefore, we're here.
Sure.
And many people come here to learn. I still would like to explain a bit more what this event is, because it's quite hard to grasp from the outside.
It is.
So maybe we just walk imaginatively through the village we see outside here and explain the things we see. The hardware tent, for example, where people start soldering things and where you have people who give workshops to learn to solder. We, of course, teach ourselves to make radio. We have two talks in two bunkers over there, and there are lockpicking guys, there are a retro gaming village.
An audio village where you can play with audio, if you like to. Lots of workshops in the bunkers around us, and of course lots of little things, every little organization that comes over here has its own little plaything with them. So we see a lot of stuff here, lots of lights in the night. It's really, really beautiful to see all this great LED light and this great lit trees and so on. Really nice.
Yeah, you told me about it, because I think you have some experience with event organizing.
Yes, I have some experience with event organizing. I've done a lot of with light and road shows and rock shows and so on, and discos, and I know how a process of an event is. And in this case, it's really awesome to see all this chaotic stuff bringing up one of the best organized events I ever saw. It's very fluid. Everybody who's helping, who's volunteering here, is organizing themselves, just doing what they like to do, and it works. It just works great, even better than with a real hierarchical structure.
Yeah, and most of the people who work here are volunteers, and we call them angels.
Yeah, volunteers are volunteers at all. The only benefit they get from this is that they get food for free.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else they pay, they camp here like everybody else. They work days and nights. They work sometimes 40 hours in a row and try to bring their part to this camp, and they're very proud of their job. They can be. It's organized well, really well.
This is one of the interesting things about the hacker culture, that many things you normally think of as non-voluntary stuff, usually where you get money for. In this case, there we have a call-in, I hear. Oh, no. Yeah, you are organizer of the angels, and therefore people call you. Okay.
Yes, they do.
We need a phone out here. Okay, I totally lost track. Point is, nearly everything here is done voluntarily, except the people who provide food. Everyone else is totally as a visitor to here, and there's no hierarchical structure beside the few organizers who just do infrastructure and the planning and the talks.
Basically, there's a hierarchical structure. There's the CERT, there are the augurs, there are the archangels, how we call them, that are the masters of the angels in their part, Odividio, heralds, and lots of other work that is to do. But in the end, everything is organized by the angels themselves. They ask their supervisor if they can do some stuff or how they should do stuff. And the supervisors are more or less there to organize the chaos a little bit, so everything works out. And so we see on day one, there are a lot of problems, as usual, as with the Congress, as with every camp. But on day two, it will work perfect and fluidly.
Mm. And have you seen something similar to this in any other event, any other hacker event?
No. No, nowhere in the world. I've been to juggler events, I've been to organization, big organizations for learning how to make rock shows and so on. Never it was this fluid working. Mm. And you can go here every day and night, talk to anybody, ask anybody any stuff, and you will get an honest answer.
Mm-hmm. And can you give any explanation for this?
I think it's the mindset of a hacker. It's hacking is not breaking stuff. Hacking is teaching. Hacking is how you want to know things, how they work out. Most hackers started as a little kid having their first electro car, and 10 minutes after it was broken in every part and every piece, and they tried to put it together again. And that's the spirit they keep all their life. And the spirit of fixing things or doing other stuff with things they meant to be is and talking about this is also making up good teachers. Mm-hmm. And they all benefit from it.
Yeah, and partly it is totally autodidactic, and I see the 16-year-old we had yesterday on the first show, he was totally, oh my god, I'm learning so many new things here. And on the other side, there are many brilliant people here, and definitely many good teachers. And I'm happy to see so many children here, so people really come with their family. It's not in any way like you would imagine a hacker conference if you just hear the media cliches about it. So this is the best publicity that could be in this case, you know?
Yeah, it is really. I remember the look on the face of my girlfriend when we went here and built up the tent. She looked around me and said, I thought you bring a week with nerds. Yes, I do. But these are all fun people, all have something to say, something to tell, something to show, and that's great.
Yeah. And maybe if we get people interested, you can watch the streams from all talks at events.ccc.de, and you can also listen to us over the next 4 or 5 days. We'll stop streaming on Sunday afternoon, yep. But till then we have constant program, and the people in Vienna especially can use these possibilities. Cohen, where can one find our stream and our information?
Well,
it's the HX2 wiki, or?
Yeah, it's mostly on the HX2 wiki. It's wiki.hx2.org, and then /, followed by radio, the word radio with a capital R.
Mm-hmm. I'll put that in the show notes for the Signal show so that the radio listeners really could tune in. I'm going to tell you, you will never ever have the possibility to get a more honest view into the hacker scene than if you just tune into this camp here and start listening, start watching, and follow the tracks. If some of you are on Twitter, there is the hashtag CCCCamp, and yeah, there are constant updates in there. And yeah, should I try another time with music?
Yeah, I think you're still playing, so first stop that.
Okay.
But you're playing from your laptop. But yes. It's fun to do this. We are literally on a campsite, so we have a tent here, and the studio is basically it's six camping tables and a lot of improvised gear and also professional gear, and that together we have a complete studio here.
I mean, the tech we have is totally pro, but it is a tent and there are people outside and there's music and bugs getting killed with a bug killer, and yeah. So you could imagine, and now we play some music and then we are back. And there we are back. And yes, we prepared something for you now. And this is that we will make a walk with you, an imaginable walk about the campsite here. And we'll start at the entrance. Remember yourself being in a tiny town around half an hour north of Berlin, and you come into an entrance door on a camping area, right? You have a big parking lot, and then you take the left turn, and you are on the Bus Aldurin Boulevard, and you have a lot of tents all over. The first one is the Telecomics area. You will hear about that in an hour on our show, because Walter has some of them. And then you have La Quadrature du Net. That's a French hacker organization. And you go on and you start to see two bunkers. The first one is named Kourou and the second Baikonur. These are two space havens. The left one from the European Space Agency, Kourou, and Baikonur is the very traditional Russian space haven. And all over the place you have airplanes. Very old airplanes, because this camp area is normally a museum for airships. And during the night, these airplanes have something really special about them.
Yeah, at the night it's really, really special. Because the museum allowed us to play with the trains, planes. And we could build up light in there. Everywhere you see planes build up with light, with big in their engines, in their cockpits. Everywhere you see really tiny details of the airplanes. You can walk on it, you can play with them. Even yet we have some helicopters standing around here. Somebody loved touching their blades. And we also have an artist here who is live painting a MiG. I think it's a MiG-27. He has an image in mind, and he's going to paint it on this MiG. Life over these 10 days we're here now, and we will see how this looked like. It looks really nice from what we can see at the start. And one word to the Kourou and Baikonur launch pads. That are actually no launch pads, that are old bunkers. This whole place is an old Russian airplane site, and it's kind of looks old, rotten, rusty a little bit, but it has this very flair. And these two bunkers are actually our lecture halls, where we have two lectures simultaneously, about 20 each day, where a speaker always stands up for 1 hour and talks about his topic.
And you see the reoccurring theme of space, and that's very strong in this camp. And it is connected to a project of Nick Farr called Hackers in Space. Maybe it's not only Nick Farr, but he's the first one who told me about it. And the whole topic, like an umbrella over the camp, is Hackers in Space. Can you tell us something about that?
Oh, I really can't tell you anything about that, because that catched me at the first day, as it catched a lot of people, because the theme of space is not unknown to the Chaos to the Chaos Computer Club. So we had a lot of events where space was involved. That there are really people that like to bring a hacker to the moon in the next couple of years amazed me, and I hope they will get it.
Yes, I have a microphone. And to finish our imaginable walk, I mean, it's totally silly to think we could give you a full picture, but you will see, for example, huge antennas, because right beside the bunkers is the Leibandwill of the Viennese hackerspace MetaLab, and they have a very special project called Moonbounce, where they will actually send a signal to the moon, bounce it on its surface, and then gather the signal on a second antenna on the Earth and make a connection over the moon, which is, in fact, the longest connection you can make between two points on Earth, and it will have a latency of 2 seconds.
Amazingly crazy.
It's about what? I think 35... It's about 70,000 kilometers, right?
Oh, 700,000, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, more than I can imagine at this point, at least.
Typical nerds, always details. And yeah, network cables all over. Every tent nearly has power supply, has internet connection. They even put fiber cables here on the total land site to get fast internet connection for the whole camp. And I've seen that you delivered some of these fiber cables.
Yeah, that's a while ago already. I think it was in May,
mm-hmm.
Which actually it was better weather than because it was nice and warm, and now it's a bit rainy. But yeah, it's sort of we have a camp that's sort of the same as this one in the Netherlands. I mean, this camp is once every 4 years in Germany. In the Netherlands, we have also a hacker camp, and that's also once every 4 years, and it interleaves. So every 2 years, there's some place in Europe you can go and watch another unique edition of one of these events.
Mm-hmm. How would you compare the Netherlands hacker camp with the Chaos Communication camp?
It's difficult. There are lots of similarities. I mean, I see these similarities in hackers I meet everywhere in the world. It's a kind of thinking, a kind of doing. Something like the Chaos Communication Club. It's not something that could exist, I think, in the Dutch hacker culture. I don't know if that's because it's has firm roots in the squatting community of the 80s, all that, where of course authority and the anarchistic movement. Whereas I believe in Germany, there's more of a tendency to go to hierarchies. Mm-hmm. So I doubt that a club like the Chaos Communication Club, which unites lots of hackers of Germany into one entity. I think we Dutch are too stubborn. We all want our own way with everything. And if someone starts something, then it's something that Nick Farr also mentioned in his speech, you know. We have a lot of ideas and tend to disagree about how to do it, which is great because you explore all kinds of avenues. But I think that's the main difference between looking at Germany and looking at the Netherlands community.
Yeah, and you can also hear it because the people always tell you from which space they are in the Netherlands. In Germany, they are either CCC or not.
Yeah.
And
oh, that's not true, really. In Germany, we have the CCC is more than an umbrella about everything, and there are a lot of small groups in their region. So there's the MRMCD, this Main Rhine-Neckar Chaos Club. There's the Entropia in Karlsruhe and so on. So we have a whole lot of little spaces, but real hacker spaces, they're coming up, they're growing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there are a lot of regional CCC chapters, so to speak, and they're not necessarily doing exactly the same as all the others or following some common guide or whatever. It's
That's a part of the CCC. It doesn't have any guide. It's like
that's the first C in there.
It's not just the name, yeah.
Yeah.
But although it has chaos in its name and is often chaotic, when you look at their accomplishments, I mean, the CCC is a totally accepted political player in Germany. They speak in the parliament. They are asked for certain legal decisions. If their voices are always heard and if they make a difference is another question. But people talk with them.
Yes, they do. And that's really great to see because they are the people that understands the techniques of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem with our politician. They don't even understand the techniques of the past.
Mm. Yeah, looking at the future and looking at the possibilities and risks. I think that was the starting theme of the CCC. But
yeah,
I know a lot about the history because I learned about it, but I don't want to go into that now. I would much prefer to introduce our other guest who sneaked in here, and that's Bicycle Mark.
Hello, hello. It's hard to sneak into a place that you have to open a zipper and the chairs are squeaking, but I snuck in, yes. Hello, everyone.
Yeah, it is.
I tried to conceal you, your entry a bit.
Thank you. Yeah. Excellent job. Excellent. I didn't hear myself.
Oh, yeah. Bicycle Mark. Mark, I think you have to introduce yourself.
Sure.
I know you are a podcaster, first of all, because I also started as a podcaster and I noticed your work from early on.
Yeah.
But I know you were also a journalist and you are many other things.
Sure, yeah. It's true. The number one thing that I love to do and that I have done since 2004 is do a podcast on underreported news, things that affect human lives, conflicts, environmental, human conflicts, historical conflicts. And that's kind of how I bumped into this world of Hacker Camp. And for me, it was the CCCB, Tim, who is, of course, very into radio. And he came and found me in 2005. He had been listening to the program. And he introduced me to this whole world, just with a DVD that he had of, must have been What the Hack, actually. And I saw What the Hack, and I thought it was amazing. And he said, so you should also speak at these events. And I said, why would I speak at these events? I'd love to, but why would they listen to me? And he said, yeah, well, because we also do social, we have a social track. And what you're doing is a bit, you're doing media your way, a little different, on your own, no big organization, no funding. You're like a media hacker. And whether I deserve it or not, I said, I really like this. I will speak. So I submitted talks ever since then, and I've sort of got addicted to it. Maybe too much. Maybe some people think, oh, he's back. But I don't think so. I think people are very kind and appreciative and so on. So this has become, like a lot of people say, my one of my families. So anyway, and yes, I'm a journalist. My podcast is where I do my research, and I use that sometimes in my writing. And in the end, I get all these offers to travel to different corners of the world to either talk about podcasting or to talk about journalism or to talk about some specific issue. Or lately I get asked to be a teacher, teach some kind of audio, video, text, interviewing, lots of different things. And these teaching jobs are increasingly in developing countries or conflict zones. The conflict zone that I've worked at now last year and this year is in Afghanistan. Very recently I was working in Georgia, which is a different kind of place, not a conflict zone, but a zone very affected by conflict. And so my work takes me there, and while I'm there, I learn about the place that I'm in. I'd continue to do my program, and if I can, I write an article, maybe one that earns me a little money, possible, or just for my readers, or for some small magazine that doesn't really pay. I do it all.
Yeah, but what I found so interesting about your life is you're always at a different place, it seems. There's some places you tend to return to, but every time I read another tweet, it's, oh, I'm now in Afghanistan, I'm now there, and that's...
Yeah, it's been that way. I don't know when it will stop. I don't know that I said, oh, I really want to travel everywhere. I might have said that at some point. Some of these trips, I don't even want them. No, I want them. So it's true. And I get a bad reputation back in Amsterdam where I live because people think, oh, you won't be here. Oh, no, we won't involve you. My Frisbee team thinks I don't want to play anymore. It's not true. But it's just because I'm away sending photos of me with a Frisbee in Afghanistan or something. So, yeah, I do wind up traveling maybe 6 months of the year. Not that I'm away for 6 months, but I'm either going or coming back, and it feels like half the year. Which is a pity, because I have a beautiful life in Amsterdam, and there's plenty of social issues going on right there, which I try and catch up on and cover, too.
I mean, you're one of these big examples of a personal media outlet. It's like you are your own channel.
Yeah.
And always when I think about this type of person, I think about Tim Pritlove. But actually, it's funny that he got you here, and you were also earlier into podcasting than he. And I mean, basically, he did this Chaos Radio thing and stuff. But you two are these two examples for me that, so much can evolve out of a podcast that you, learn the skills that you get interconnected with so many peoples and issues. And can you remember what was the motivation back then to start a podcast?
Oh, okay. Back then it was, I liked the world of blogging. We might remember, the people in this room might remember the world of blogging in the late 90s. I started around 99 playing with this sort of blog system. And then by 2000, I started writing my blog, and it was about travel. It was really freeform, whatever came to mind, but it was a daily thing. And I remember that I liked very much writing about other bloggers. It was also a kind of a game to get them to pay attention to me and maybe comment. So it was like poking someone to get them to notice you and maybe participate. And so we did that. And it was very interesting community, and a lot of people came to read. And then, even though I was having fun in the world of blogging, and I was understanding a little better what I want to write about, it became more about journalism and so on. Then when I heard that you could do audio, it was almost like I had been waiting for it, but I didn't know I'd been waiting for it. Blogger, in probably 2004, offered a phone number. It was like in California. And you could pick up a phone and you could call Blogger's 800 number. And I was in Amsterdam. I would just get a phone card and call from a payphone. It's cheaper. And I would leave a message. And this message would go on your blog. Very simple. And so I thought, well, great. I mean, I could write, but now I can just talk and people can listen to me. And maybe I can have fun with this somehow. I don't know. So I would pick up the Dutch newspaper or any. Sometimes I had the French newspaper. And I would read about what is in the headlines, what is in the small articles on the third page. And then I would just read it. I'm pretty good with languages, so I could translate things into English as in a summary. And this became sort of my weekly communique. And that was sort of how I started with audio. And I loved it. And people reacted, especially because it was early on for audio on the internet. People were just coming from everywhere, reacting, commenting from everywhere. Some maybe because I was the only podcast they had heard of until that time. So that's, for me, how it started. I just wanted to use my voice instead of writing. And I felt like I maybe had something else to offer, something better than I was as a writer, than I could be with my voice. I don't know.
I think your tagline still is the best for all podcasts, the underreported news. Honestly, I'm jealous about it because...
Underreported news and global concerns. Yeah, I kept it very vague.
Yeah, but the first part, I think that's the general thing all podcasts try to accomplish, to be an alternative media source. If it's not just a diary podcast and fun, then if people tend to have content, then it's usually something you don't hear in this form, at least in the mainstream media.
Yes, yes. Although a critic of mine, I don't know who, but a critic of mine could say, well, I've heard this before, you're moving all the time. And that's not a good thing necessarily, that you're moving topic all the time. Because life is more, you know, specific problems that we have in this world deserve more than 1 week focus or two programs. So I like what I do. Indeed, I would call myself my own media, but I would... listen to anyone who would say to me, you're not thorough, you don't spend enough time, you move too quickly. I would agree with something like that. So, yeah, it's always building, hopefully getting better, and I can always see the flaws in what I'm doing. Mm. But I keep doing it anyway.
Hopefully. And everyone can see that you often come up with totally new subjects. Mm-hmm. When you only listen, look at the talks you gave at conference and here at camp, usually they are totally different each time.
Yeah.
But I heard in your program, and usually you try to catch up certain issues. If you had an interview partner before, something is happening, you try to get him again stuff like that. And I would like to talk a bit in the remaining 17 minutes about two of these projects. The main one would be the one you talked here about, Fairform. But of all, I think we have to mention your trip to Afghanistan.
Yeah. So I've been back a week from my second time working in Afghanistan. I was only there about 3 weeks, and many of those days were travel days. But I am part of a collective. I'm part of many collectives, actually. We freelancers have to survive. And I like, you know, when I come here to camp, meeting people, and you want to continue to work with them. So I have a collective in the Netherlands called the Media Ridders, and we do work together, apart. And I have this international collective called Small World News. Now, Small World News is a media development organization. It's a for-profit company, in fact. I learned recently. No, I knew. And they offer themselves, they look for projects or they suggest projects in the developing world, in conflict zones, wherever they can be useful for teaching, for reporting, maybe for using technology to report or teaching people to use that technology. And they've been doing this for about two years, maybe 3 years. And it started by the guys who did the old video blog Alive in Baghdad, which was a great, great video blog, which was just everyday stories from people in Baghdad and beyond, starting around 2005, 2004. And it was the only, I mean, you couldn't get any other independently produced internet-based video from Baghdad where you would hear, like, the liquor store owner explaining, this is my liquor store, I started this place in what year, I make an okay living, I support three children, my biggest problem in this place is the law, or is the people who come here and harass me because I'm selling alcohol. And they would go to some jobs that I wouldn't even think of. They went to the Iraqi rail company. And I hadn't been thinking about the Iraqi rail company, but they exist. And they've got some old rail lines and some old trains. And they said, you know, tell us about the rail lines in Iraq. And I was like, oh yeah, tell me about the rail lines in Iraq. They still exist. How are they doing? And so this was their project that started it all. And then after that, they've tackled different, they've had Alive in Mexico. It died down after a while. You know, Alive in Baghdad died as well because there's so many problems with being a journalist in Iraq that many of the participants had to leave the country or had to quit under a lot of pressure. So Alive in Baghdad is always waiting for maybe more funding, maybe more inspiration, but for now it's sleeping. And, you know, the videos are there for people to watch. I think two years worth of videos, if I'm not mistaken, it could be. So Small World News and I have been together since we all met at Republica, maybe 2008, 2009, I don't know, time is passing. And we said, you know, we should work together, and so we will. And sure enough, last year, around the elections in Afghanistan, an elections observation group said, we want to use mobile phone reporting. We want our observers at polling stations in different parts of the country to be able to submit their report. So we know about Ushahidi. Some of the guys really are talented developers and programmers. I have just been following it from the user end for a long time. And so Ushahidi is this interactive mapping system. And we implemented that in Afghanistan for international observers. I taught them how to use it. I received a lot of their concerns and their complaints about it. And I was there during a crazy time, during parliamentary elections 2010. For a month, a little more than a month. It was a beautiful time. I love Afghanistan. Love to leave it too when the time comes, but love to go. And then this time around, I was just teaching video production to teenagers, young adults, different professions, some no job, who are interested in learning more when it comes to media production, audio, video, and this time it was all about video. So I was in Herat, which is on the border with Iran. Very interesting group, very amazing place with a lot of history. Every place in Afghanistan has a lot of history, but Herat is amazing. And then in Jalalabad, close to Pakistan, that last stop before people go to Pakistan, we were teaching there. And there you have also a great cultural difference between the rest of the country. It's a Pashtun area. Pashtuns are different from all the different other groups. And there we were teaching for 7-8 days at a time. And it was an amazing time. And I was doing my podcast as best I could at that time with whoever I met along the way, sometimes Afghans, sometimes international workers who you meet at the guest house, wherever you're staying. There's not that many safe places to stay, so.
It's a totally different type of development work, if it is development work at all, because it's not a big organization and it really focuses on individuals and like promoting journalism.
Yeah. Yeah, in some ways, you know, I need to learn more about Afghan university system, but in some ways, it's their university, it's their higher education. They don't have so many university choices, there are a few, but if you want to learn a skill, there's no technical school, not many. So what you need, unfortunately or fortunately, because it costs quite a lot of money to bring foreigners, but what you need is people who know the stuff to come to your country if you don't have them nationally, and many Afghans with talent and skills have left. So you need foreigners to come and to teach. Now, what we would like, honestly, although I love going, what we would like is that we teach once, we teach maybe twice, and that then these Afghans can teach others and we're not necessary anymore, which would be so sad in one way because I won't get to go back and teach, which I like to do, but I understand that it's more important that we stop spending money on people like me because I require a house or whatever I require. And start spending money on national teachers and students.
Mm.
Okay. Look at that. And we were just talking about Tim Pritlove, and he's right outside the tent on his bike. Merlin is, no, Kira is on the back. Merlin is big now.
Okay.
And Verena is out there as well. So that's what's great about being in this tent. People can ride by and wave. And I am in the middle of Afghanistan, but I can change the story to something else. And I'm so jealous they have bikes. Bicycle Mark is jealous.
Oh my god. Yeah, Tim will give us a show on Friday. Not Safe for Work, a German show with Holger Klein.
I've listened to it. I understand most of the jokes. I think I will sit in this room during that show.
Oh, I hope so too.
I haven't talked with him about it. I know I will be in this room. So I'm going to do the
security clearance so that I can sit in the room, please.
We need securities. Can we get angels for that?
Yeah, I volunteer.
Yes, please.
That's right. They need more angels. I've seen the signs.
Yes, we need more angels.
We need more angels, yeah. And we will continuously announce that. But I see that, you know, we are also in Vienna on the broadcast, We only have 10 minutes left on that. So The last 10 minutes, we have to rush. Mark, first, before we leave it, the URL of your blog, of your podcast, of where can people find you?
So citizenreporter.org is my website. And if you go there now, there's still the latest posts right on the front page, including podcast, video, podcast as well, and text from Afghanistan. And now I'm already starting to move on. I'll be posting actually interviews with different players from Fairphone that have been, and also someone who's been studying the Congo, to tackle this topic, which I spoke about today, on conflict minerals that go into our technology. So that's also on the website.
Yeah. Yes, I'm afraid we won't have the time to really cover Fairphone and this very interesting problem of conflict minerals now in the detail it would deserve.
No.
But your talk will be online for people from Vienna to listen to. And I saw you recording stuff, so you maybe will make a post about the camp. So
yes, for sure. Yeah, and I hope to talk to different people at the camp. There's a couple of talks on e-waste, and you know, it's connected to this whole issue of ethically handling how we make these devices, where the parts come from, how the people are being treated who make this happen. So e-waste is sort of the end part of that, where it all goes, who has to break it down, and so forth. So I would like to talk to, among other people, those people during this camp.
And problematic materials is a big topic. A good friend of mine is a goldsmith, and he told me about it. And basically, the most basic reduction would be that it is a kind of fair trade for minerals, metals, other resources, which we mostly use in modern technology.
Yeah. And then, so fair trade, you know, you need that definition. What does it mean, fair? So that's where, you know, this definition is sometimes difficult, but you got to start somewhere. And so you start with that people who are producing this stuff, that are digging it out of the ground, are treated properly. So what's proper treatment? We have to agree on that as well. A proper wage, you know, not being physically harmed, at least, although the work is no matter what, it's physically harmful, but not at the point of a gun, you know, someone forcing you to do your job. So there are these set of ethics that I think the world can agree on if the world were motivated. And that's where you kind of require that consumers, we're all consumers. I can hardly think of a corner of the world where people don't have mobile phones, where we would all say, listen, it matters to us how these are made and what the pieces, what lives have been harmed or not harmed by the pieces. So, yeah, this requires some pressure from people, some interest. And in my opinion, people should be interested because they're involved. You can say, well, I didn't mean for anyone to get harmed, but you still buy the phone. I mean, you have some role. I have some role. We have some role in this whole process, whether or not we want to admit it.
Mm. I mean, we see a similar tendency when it comes to food. There, you already have the visibility, the signs on the product, which somehow indicate if this is biological, whatever this means in a local context, or local produced goods. And do you think that it is basically just adapting this for consumer technology products?
Unfortunately, no. Although the idea of certification is interesting if it's done properly and respected. But unfortunately, the whole food comparison is difficult because, you know, in food, you're talking about chemicals. And in mining, we're talking about sort of life and the workers, you know, we're not really talking about the farmer's health, although we should. So it's a little bit different in that sense. But certification, yes, it's a similar idea that we have a standard.
Mm. And we come to an end. I have different times now.
Hard out. We call that a hard out.
And but I have a last question for you, which is, how would I put it? You noticed the space theme we have here
yes.
at the camp. And
yes.
also this journey to the moon and hackers in space, the whole topic is like an umbrella over the whole thing.
Yes.
And do you think that this is the right vision for the hacker community? Or isn't maybe something like Hackers for Africa, wouldn't this be the more urgent concern?
You know, we have so many people in this world and at this camp that there are enough people that we should be able to do both or more. So I don't mind that, in my opinion, that space is a theme for many people here, a project they're busy with. I think it's fantastic. But we should also have the hackers concerned with development. And we do. And we do. They just don't get as much attention. But anyway, I think time is up. I'm not sure. You guys are signaling each other. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen at home, these people, they're
we developed our own language.
I'm giving away all your... That's why I'm a podcaster, you see? In radio, we don't
press out of here.
We don't describe what you're doing behind the board. But
yeah.
in podcasting, we laugh at what you're doing. No, we respect it.
If the people in Vienna are still listening, in my... clock, we have another 4 minutes, but I don't know if it's correct.
Yeah, they're gonna cut this off earlier, so
we'll see. Yes, definitely goodbye to the people in Vienna. I hope we encourage you to listen and watch to the content here produced from our side and from the talks, and that's for it for about now from our side. And yeah, we'll go on here on the channel with Activism Hour. And that's it.
Do you have a theme song for Activism Hour?
No, not yet.